accent showed. You were reading papers. Seemed kind of intense.
Oh, that. She turned back to the water, her shoulders curving inward and the sexy memories icing over. We were opening this time capsule thing we did a long time ago. It's probably good you didn't come over and hear that part.
Time capsule?
She picked at a splinter in the wood railing. Just something we did that summer after everything happened. Promises we made to the class of 2005 about our futures. Kincaid decided we should open the letters tonight to see what our teenage selves hoped we'd become. I decided we should get drunk after. He made a throaty sound, like a laugh that didn't quite make it out, and moved closer. He settled next to her along the wooden rail, his gaze fixed on the dark water.
Sounds like a solid plan to me.
I thought so. She rattled the ice cubes in her glass and dared a peek at him. But all she got was his familiar profile, the slight bump in his nose from when he'd broken it sophomore year, and the unfamiliar scruff as he took a sip from his drink. It was hard for her not to stare and catalog all the little differences, all the changes time and experience had given him. The harder angles, the dark mess of hair that looked at least two haircuts past neat, expression that didn't reveal a thing. He was still Finn somewhere in there, but gone was the boy with the wide smile and the playful attitude. There was a sharpness to him now, jagged edges, like if she met him in a dark alley, she'd have trouble determining if he was friend or foe. He lifted his drink in agreement and turned, his green eyes gray in the darkness.
That was my plan, too, minus the time capsule part.
Ha! Lucky you. She shifted her stance and accidentally bumped her shoulder against his, sending a tendril of awareness down her arm. She wet her lips, ignoring the shiver. Now you'll never know if you lived up to Teen Finn's expectations. He was quiet for a moment, and she wondered if he was having the same push and pull inside as she was. On one hand, this felt comfortable. They'd always talked easily with each other. But at the same time, they were strangers now. Strangers who had this big, breathing beast between them. He took a long swig from his drink.
Teen Finn didn't have expectations. He just wanted to play football, not work for his dad, and get the hell away from here.
Guess he lived up to that last part, at least. I was convinced you'd change your name and move to a foreign country. His jaw flexed.
Something like that.
You'll have to give me your off-the-grid tips, she said, trying to make light of a completely unliked situation. I had to change all my legal stuff to my mom's maiden name because I got tired of the phone calls from reporters and weirdos. But people still find me. Some dude cornered me at the grocery store last fall, convinced that I was part of a conspiracy with Joseph, that he'd been my boyfriend. Finn frowned her way, his grip flexing against his glass.
You need someone to do a security evaluation for you. Lock things down tighter and give you better protection. There are sick people who get obsessed with news stories like ours. You're too easy to find.
She gave a half-hearted shrug. I told the cops what happened, and I keep my stuff unlisted. I'm sure the guy just got lucky. He didn't try to hurt me. He was just an asshole who wanted fodder for his conspiracy website. Finn considered her, his hair ruffling in the breeze, and his expression serious.
You work as a web designer at MCT Design and live in Austin, renting, not owning. You're not married, you drive a Honda, you're a member of an online book club, and you've registered an LLC for a photography business that, from what I can tell, you never opened.
Her stomach flipped over and reared back. And you know that how?
How do you think?
He tapped the phone tucked in his back pocket.
The internet? If someone wanted to find you, they could.
Unease curled through her, Finn knowing that information wasn't a threat to her, but hearing that real stalkers could find her that easily was more than a little unsettling. She'd thought she'd put in protections both online and off. Why the hell were you looking? He was stoic for a moment, but then his lips kicked up at the corners, some of the old fin peeking through.
What? You never looked me up?
Her spine drew straight, and she sputtered for a second. Well, obviously I wasn't as successful. What am I supposed to do if you're not on Facebook? My hands were tied. His smirk went to a full smile, and he chuckled.
Your online detecting skills are top-notch, Aries.
Hearing him call her by her surname sent nostalgic warmth through her. She'd always loved when he referred to her like she was one of the guys on the football team. For some reason, she'd found it unbearably sexy. Hey, I'm a website designer, not a security specialist. I make things beautiful and functional. Someone else at the company worries about making them safe, all right? He lifted his hands in defense.
Duly noted. And to answer your question, I looked you up because I wanted to make sure you were doing okay.
Okay. There was that damn word again. Her mood soured. I'm fine. She turned to face him and swept a hand in front of herself like she was Vanna White revealing a new puzzle to solve. As you can see, fully functioning human and contributing member of society, much to everyone's shock, I'm sure. His gaze slid over her at that, accepting the unintended invitation for a slow head-to-toe appraisal.
Not mine. You were always the one going places, the one with big plans. I love that about you.
The way he said it wasn't suggestive, but his attention sweeping over her made her skin tingle anyway, a slow burning awareness that spread across her nerve endings. She used to murmur all her crazy ideas to him when they got too worked up. They'd kiss until they were mindless, and then he'd slow them down with, "Tell me where you'd go next, Livy." She'd lean into him and close her eyes, rattle off exotic locations and the photos she imagined taking, weave the fantasies until they were both presentable enough to get back to class, or home, or wherever they were supposed to be without revealing what they'd been doing. He used to tell her that nothing killed his heart on quicker than hearing about her leaving. The memory tightened her throat, and she set down her drink. What about you? You okay? He ran a hand over the back of his neck. Weariness there.
Depends on your definition of okay, I guess.
She cocked her head, the world tilting a bit, and revealing that maybe she was a little tipsier than she'd thought.
Meaning?
He broke eye contact and glanced out at the line of trees on the other side of the creek. He was quiet for a while, pensive, and she found herself focusing on his forearms, on the way the hair dusted over his tanned skin, on the obvious tension in the muscles beneath. He wasn't nearly as relaxed as he was trying to appear. She wasn't sure he was going to answer, but after a few seconds he bowed his head.
Meaning I'm back in the town that thinks I'm a hero when I wasn't, talking to some reporter about stuff I wish I could forget, and standing here with the girl I almost got killed, and I still don't know what to say to her.
The words fell like stones between them. Heavy words that would sink in the creek and pull them both under. She swallowed hard, her everything's cool bravado faltering. Finn?
No.
He set his drink on the railing and turned fully to her, apparently ready to dive into the murky waters of their past.
I don't know what to say because then nothing will undo it. I know nothing can fix it. But how about I start here?
He met her gaze, anguish there.
I'm sorry, Liv. I'm so fucking sorry. There hasn't been a goddamn day that I haven't thought about what I did to you.
She closed her eyes, breathed.
I know those are just words, but they're the truth. I was no hero that night. You know it, and I know it. It's time everyone else did, too. And if you give me the go-ahead, I will call Daniel tomorrow and tell him everything. He can put the truth out in the documentary.
Liv's lungs compressed, too many things rolling through her to pinpoint one emotion. She'd imagined this conversation many times before. She'd been so angry and devastated those months following, and had thrown all this blame at him in her mind. No, she hadn't been killed, but she'd blamed her PTSD squarely on Finn. If he hadn't left, she'd never have had that gun pointed at her face. That image wouldn't have haunted her for so many years. That feeling of aloneness, of knowing she was going to die, would have never imprinted on her psyche. But the words that spilled out of her weren't the ones from that script. "You can't tell." His brows bunched.
"What?"
"That's not what I want. You were a hero." She reached out and touched the spot on his left shoulder where he'd been shot. "You took a bullet for Rebecca. You earned that title." He put his hand over hers, flattening her palm against him. His heart pounded beneath her fingers, hard and strong. "And I'll let Joseph rot to you." "And it is what it is," she said, moving her hand away and looking down. "You think some sort of public declaration or apology is going to make anything better?" "Ah, that's not what I want at all." She took a deep breath, trying to rein in her emotions and focus through the fuzz of alcohol. "You know what that would set off in the press? It's going to be bad enough when the documentary comes out and stirs up interest again. If new information comes to light, they'll be all over us again. How do you feel, Miss Arias? What were you two doing in the closet? What do you think of him choosing to save his date instead of you? Did you two have some sort of sexual relationship? I can't deal with that." She shook her head, haunted at the thought. "It won't change what happened. Nothing changes what happened. It's like a rerun we're forced to live over and over again."
"Live?
I'm serious." She pressed her lips together, searching for the right words. "I'm tired of being Olivia Arias, the Long Acre survivor, the girl in the closet, the goth Latina or whatever gem they'd choose to call me this time around, which would probably be something horrible like the slutty chick who was making out with someone else's date." Anger flashed through her, remembering all the crap that had made it through the media, all the misinformation. "I'm done. Everyone else gets to decide who we are. They get to name us, label the boxes. The girl in the closet, the jock hero, the wounded valedictorian. It's why no one in my life outside of my family knows who I really am. I got so tired of all the bullshit. I'm not a character in some bad thriller novel or inspirational story." "Of course not. And neither are you. You were a hero for Rebecca. You also left me behind that night. Which hurt. But you were a 17-year-old kid who was scared shitless and reacted. And before that, we were totally different things. But we're stuck with how they branded us. Everything that we were before that night got erased." She snapped her fingers in front of his face. "Gone. Just like that."
"Not everything, Liv,"
he said softly, lifting his hand like he was going to reach for her, but then lowering it to his side again.
"They can't take everything."
"You know, I'm not so sure." She pointed toward the door to the restaurant. "Tonight, I had to sit at that table and listen to what my teenage self wanted. That girl, you remember? She knew who she wanted to be. And all it did was remind me that those sick assholes stole not just my friends' lives, but the could-bes from us. We'll never get to find out who we would have been otherwise, before we were aftermath."
Aftermath.
He rubbed the spot between his eyes, shadows crossing his face.
"That's exactly what it feels like sometimes."
She tipped her head back and sighed, her frustration on a roll now. She always got ranty or reckless when she was drunk. Those margaritas had been a bad idea. But she couldn't staunch the words now that they were flowing. "And I hate that I'm out here with you and have to dredge this stuff up again. Other people have reunions where they drink punch and play retro music, do stupid line dances, and talk about when they were two sizes skinnier. She looked at him. We have ones where we have to discuss our friends dying, how we let each other down, and our failed dreams. And if we did drink punch and play music for some get-together, people would look at us like, how could they? She was talking too loud now, but didn't care. If I'd rather just sit down with you and remember the good times, who we were before, there must be something wrong with me. We're supposed to move on, but not too much. Be happy, but not too happy. I'm tired, Finn. I'm so sick of it being like this. I thought I was past it, but then I come here and, I don't know, it's like it's all just sitting there, waiting to remind me how we can never really escape it. How the ones who got away never really get away. Those sick bastards changed us, have their fingerprints all over our lives, and it pisses me the hell off. I don't know. All her words fell into a jumble, and her fist balled, ready to punch something that wasn't there. But she didn't have anything left.
Livy.
The softly uttered endearment undid her, popped the pin in her balloon of righteous indignation, and deflated her. She was trembling and drunk, mad and lost. Like she thought she'd been following the right map on her way to a place where she wanted to be, only to find out that she didn't just have the wrong map. She was traipsing around the wrong goddamn continent. And now she had no idea where the hell she was, or where she was supposed to go. She closed her eyes, willing herself not to break down. She didn't want to cry. She didn't feel like crying. She didn't know what she felt like. There were too many options to pick from, and that made it hard to breathe. But then big, warm hands landed on her shoulders. A gentle hold, a simple, I've got you, and she couldn't fight against it. Her muscles surrendered to the touch, and her body moved on instinct, her brain shutting off. She stepped into his space, didn't ask permission, and wrapped her arms around his waist. He stiffened in her hold, his entire body going as rigid as the boards under her feet. But when she didn't back off, he released a breath and wrapped his arms around her, pulling her fully into an embrace. She pressed her cheek against his shoulder and breathed in the earthy scent of him, the familiarity of the minty shampoo he'd always used. Her guards fell away for a minute as he simply held her. "I'm tired and pissed off, too," he said quietly. "And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. I won't say anything to the filmmaker. Just know that if there's anything I could ever do to make things up to you, anything you need, you just have to tell me." She squeezed him a little tighter, not wanting to get dragged back into the memories, the apologies, the regrets. "You can stop talking about that night. That's what you can do. At least for now," she said against his shoulder. "I didn't come out here for that. I wanted to come out here and prove that the killers don't get a say in this. We haven't talked because of them. They're winning. I don't want them to win. So maybe we can just pretend for a little while that we're old friends from high school, reminiscing about the good times."
"The good times,"
he said, his breath ruffling her hair.
"Yes."
He set his chin on her head.
"Like when all I was worried about was if our landscaper's daughter was going to be outside helping him that day."
Liv smiled, the words digging beneath the layers of all those bad memories, unearthing some of those simple, sweet ones, ones she hadn't let herself think about in a very long time. She leaned back to look up at him.
"Yes, like that. Like how you were such a perv watching me from your window.
You weren't even sneaky about it, just standing there and staring. Some of the tension left his expression, and a droll look replaced it.
You wore a tank top, short shorts, and combat boots. I was 16 and not that noble.
It was a hot day.
Oh, it was hot, all right,
he teased.
And don't pretend you didn't know exactly what you were doing to me.
She stepped back from his hold with an innocent, "Who, May?" smile. Liv had only tutored Finn once before the day she'd helped her dad put in an herb garden at Finn's house, but she'd already developed a mad crush. He'd been nothing like she'd expected from all those years of catching glimpses of him from a different social circle. He'd been funny and friendly, much smarter than people gave him credit for, and way, way too good-looking. My dad couldn't for the life of him figure out why I was volunteering to help out. I hated yard work. But free labor was free labor, so he didn't question me. If he'd realized I was trying to shamelessly flirt with the son of his customers, he wouldn't have been so accommodating. Finn chuckled.
Best surprise ever when you showed up. And, confession. The dog didn't dig up half the garden a few days later when my dad had to call y'all back out.
She narrowed her eyes. So that's why the next time I helped him you brought out lemonade and cookies. You knew I was coming and were trying to butter me up. I thought it was very Martha Stewart of you. He smirked.
Until you broke out in hives because I didn't know there was peanut butter in the cookies.
God, I still remember your face when you realized what had happened. You were so horrified. It was kind of adorable. She leaned against the railing behind her, happy to be talking about something else. Something good. And the hives were no fun, but at least Dad let me go into the house to let the meds kick in and take a break from the heat. We watched some random movie that sucked.
And then I made an ass of myself and tried to kiss you.
Yeah, with my swollen lips and tingling tongue.
Very suave.
His mouth curved, revealing the dimple hiding beneath the scruff. Damn. Still unfairly good-looking.
I remember you saying something like, "Now you're going to try to kiss me now?" Like I'd broken every rule in the How to Impress a Girl handbook. Any game I thought I had was effectively squashed.
Well, your ego could withstand a few dings, she said, poking him in the chest. Luckily, you were very pretty, and I forgave you. Multiple times. In the library, in the back of your SUV, wherever we could find. He ran a hand over his hair, chagrined and boyish. Memories assailed her, eager lips and whispered words, all that building need. They'd never gone all the way, because she'd still been a virgin. But, Lord, she'd wanted him to be her first. She'd told him that on prom night in the closet before everything had happened. If he had asked her to be his date, she would have given him everything. But just kissing him, being touched by those capable hands, still held a spot as some of the hottest encounters of her life. Our makeout game was strong.
Olympic level,
he said, dimple ablaze again. She wet her lips and had to remind herself that they were just joking around, reminiscing, trying to forget the bad stuff for a few minutes. This was not flirting, because that would be inappropriate and ill-advised and fucked up. My tutoring game, not so much, she added.
Hey, I passed, right?
He teased, wistfulness filling his gaze.
God, it's so easy to let that stuff slip away, to remember that there were good things.
He reached out and pushed a stray lock of hair behind her ear, letting his fingers linger.
Great things.
Her mouth went dry, and electric awareness traveled down her neck from the spot where he touched her, lighting up nerves along the way. She bit her lip, searching for something innocuous to say, but no words would come. All she could see was Finn, not the one who'd left her, Not the stranger he was now. The one who used to make her feel good. Her Finn. She couldn't turn away. She recognized that look. The sharp edge of yearning in it. She had a feeling she was giving the same one back. She needed to stop. Step away. Save them both. But instead, her hands reached out and flattened against his chest. She stepped closer. Too close for friendly. She did all of it without saying a word. And then she pushed up on her toes and pressed her mouth to his. Finn's muscles locked the moment Liv's hands slid up his chest. He'd seen her shift forward, but hadn't expected her to actually touch him again. He'd still been reeling from the earlier hug. But the feel of her hands splayed over him, moving up along his body, was far more erotic than the embrace had been. And his body was so starved for touch that it took everything he had not to groan. But this was Liv, and she'd been upset, and drinking. He needed to warn her away. Stop this before anything happened. That was the right thing to do. This was not what he'd come out here for. But then she kissed him. Salty, sweet lips and soft curves melted against him, blowing his noble plan to bits. Every cell in his body caught fire at the contact. It had been so long, so damn long, since he'd had a woman pressed against him. But more than that, this was Liv. Sexy, grown-up Olivia Arias, subject of his teenage fantasies. His thoughts scattered like shrapnel, making it impossible to piece any together. He was supposed to be doing something, stopping this, but he didn't say a goddamn word. He couldn't. Instead, he did the absolute worst thing. He kissed her back. His hands went to her face, and a needy groan escaped. The taste of her was like adrenaline to his blood, the tartness of her drink, and Liv's own unique flavor mixing together. She had started softly, tentatively. Hey, how about we try this for a second? But soon he couldn't help himself. When she parted her lips, he took the invitation and deepened the kiss. The starved man taking over. He hadn't been with a woman in over 2 years. But this was more than that. He hadn't kissed this woman in what felt like a lifetime. Liv gasped into his mouth, but didn't pull away. Instead, she took his cue and shifted closer, torturing him with the feel of her curves and the heat of her against him. His hands slid to the back of her neck, gripping that soft place and holding her where he wanted her. But as the kiss went on, he craved more, every male cell in his body making demands. He wanted to tip her head back and work his way down her neck, take that salty skin between his teeth, fill his hands with her lush curves, and follow with his tongue until she moaned for him, until she begged and fell apart in his arms. Maybe she wanted that too, because this was not a fumbling teenage kiss in the library stacks. This was the kiss of a woman with experience, one who knew what kisses like this led to, one who lit matches because she wanted the fire. So when she fully aligned her body against his, all that soft heat grinding against the increasingly unsoft part of him, he was ready to set her whole world ablaze. His brain switched off completely. Gone were logical thoughts, rational explanations, or wise decisions. He just wanted the oblivion right now. He wanted Liv. She gasped between kisses, grabbing a breath, her eyes dazed. Finn. His name was a plea, a prayer, a goddamn benediction. He wanted to answer it. I've got you. He took her mouth again and backed her up against the porch column, the wood creaking in protest. Screw good decisions. Screw it all. He'd figure that shit out later. This felt too good to stop. Her hands slipped beneath his t-shirt, her touch like a firebrand on his skin, and another groan escaped them both. He grabbed her thigh and dragged her leg up, pressing himself against her, liking the noise she made at the contact, loving the way her nails dug into skin. Yes, this. Tonight they'd finally... Whoa, oops! Finn froze at the voice, and Liv turned to stone in his hold, her eyes going wide as she looked over his shoulder at their visitor.
Tell me it's staff, he said against her ear. Tell me they're turning around and leaving us be.
It's Kincaid, she whispered, and she's not going anywhere.
Shit.
Finn grimaced and instantly released Liv, giving her space to straighten her clothes. But he didn't turn around to greet the unwelcome guest. He adjusted the front of his jeans instead and gave Liv a pointed look. Blessedly, she got the message and stepped around him, giving him cover while he let the ice water of being caught cool his arousal.
Hey,
Liv said, her voice a little wobbly.
Hey yourself, Kincaid replied. Everything all right?
Just fine, Liv said quickly. Too quickly. After one more breath to calm himself, Finn rolled his shoulders and turned to face the firing squad. Two of his old classmates stood there in the glow of the open door, Kincaid Breslin and Rebecca Lint. Rebecca was owl-eyed, her gaze jumping back and forth between Liv and Finn, but Kincaid looked nonplussed.
Sorry, she said brightly. Didn't mean to interrupt, things. We just got worried about you when we saw you didn't come back in. Wanted to make sure you hadn't fallen into the creek. Apparently you fell into something else.
Kincaid strolled forward, pinning her interrogating gaze on Finn.
And you are.
Finn had forced himself back to stoic mode, but before he could respond, Rebecca stepped forward, her limp barely detectable.
Finn.
Kincaid's brows went up.
Finn Dorsey?
He nodded and glanced at Rebecca.
Hi, Beck.
He didn't have much to say beyond that. His body was still too revved to focus on much else besides Liv. A chat with a classmate and a childhood friend was not on the agenda. Now, or ever, really.
Can we have a minute, please?
Liv said finally. Rebecca was still staring at him, like she was trying to figure out an equation. But Kincaid smiled a smile that could cut right through a person, her southern belle accent like a sugar-coated knife.
Sure, a minute.
And Finn, it's great to see you, but our dear Liv here has had a lot to drink tonight, so I'm sure you'll understand that after I give you a few minutes to say goodnight, I'll be walking her to her room.
Finn stared at Kincaid for a moment, and then nodded, keeping his expression smooth and feeling like a world-class dick.
Of course.
Great, Kincaid patted him on the shoulder. And don't be a stranger. We're all having breakfast at 9 tomorrow. You should join us.
Hell no to that. But she didn't wait for his answer. He wasn't her concern.
Liv was. Kincaid strode away from him, giving Liv a speaking look as she passed her. Rebecca remained silent as Kincaid grabbed her elbow and led her back into the restaurant. Liv sagged back against the railing and made a face.
Well, that was awkward.
Finn laced his hands behind his neck and blew out a breath, trying to slow his heartbeat and the unrepentant lust that was still coursing through him. He'd almost hauled Olivia up to his room, taken her to bed like she was some random woman he picked up at a bar, when she was drunk and vulnerable on top of it. What the fuck was wrong with him?
I'm sorry. I don't know what... I shouldn't have done that.
She crossed her arms, looking grim. What are you apologizing for? You didn't do anything. I kissed you.
And I'll let it go too far. You're drunk and you're...
He almost said, Liv.
You were upset.
She pinched the bridge of her nose and gave a humorless laugh. It's nice of you to take the chivalrous route, but don't fall on a sword about it.
This was what?
He asked when her words trailed off. What I do, she said flatly. Or what I used to do, at least. Alcohol makes me... She looked up and then shook her head. Let's just say I have a 2-drink limit for a reason. Part of him was dying to know what word she would have filled in there. Reckless, stupid, horny. The last one made him feel like an even bigger jerk for thinking it. He tucked his hands in his back pockets, trying not to let his thoughts show on his face.
It's been a long day and a lot of memories. I think we both just got carried away. We can't do that.
Kiss?
No, pretend we're the people we used to be. Those people don't exist anymore. They're ghosts.
She winced. There was no denying the heat that had arced between them. He'd bet everything he owned that having her in his bed would be nothing short of spectacular. But it would be a lie. Drinking or not, she was seeing the guy he used to be, and he was seeing the girl he used to know. This was a grab at the past, nothing more. Neither of them could afford to forget that. She gave him a little smile. Maybe we went traditional high school reunion after all. Getting drunk and having ill-advised hookups with classmates. You never got to bed back then. Just hearing the word bed from her was almost too much for him.
It's good that we were interrupted.
Yeah. She smirked and pushed away from the railing. Saved you from my drunken mauling. Finn sniffed.
Saved you from mine.
She reached back and tightened the ponytail he'd loosened with his roaming hands. He wet his lips. How he'd love to drag his fingers through that glossy hair, wrap his fist in it when he... Do I need to be saved from you, Finn? The question yanked him back to the moment. He gave a curt nod.
Yes. You don't want this. You don't even know me.
Don't I? Grim reality filled him. He reached out and took her hand.
No, you don't. When you woke up in the morning and your head cleared, you'd be disappointed by what you found.
She stepped closer and tipped up her chin, their hands linked by just the fingertips. And what would I find? Nothing she was looking for, and nothing that she deserved. He could guarantee that.
And making you feel good for a few hours was all I had to offer.
Her expression flattened. He leaned over and kissed the top of her head.
I'm sorry I stepped over the line tonight. Go get some rest, Liv.
With a sigh, she stepped away from him, letting their hands stretch out until the hold broke. When she was a safe distance from him, she put her hand to her hip and cocked a brow. Few hours, huh? Is that your ego talking, Dorsey? Or a promise? The little jab made him smile. He leaned back against the rail so he wouldn't reach for her again and shrugged.
Rough estimate depending on your level of endurance.
Her grin was broad, full of sass, before she turned and strolled away, calling back over her shoulder.
Hell, that might have been worth the regret.
His fingers curled against his thigh. The need to haul her up against the nearest wall, a real thing.
Go to bed, Arius.
I'm already gone. The door shut behind her, and he rested his head against the porch column.
So am I.
He'd come back to do his part and help the charity by giving an interview. But that was over now. There was no reason left for him to hang around. He'd already been taking a risk by being there. He'd taken a bigger risk by kissing Liv. First thing in the morning, he was getting the hell out of there. Chapter 4 Kincaid was the only one left when Liv walked back into the restaurant. She was spinning the overturned mason jar round and round on the table, chin in hand, obviously lost in thought. Liv reached out and tapped her. Hey. Kincaid startled and then turned, looking disoriented for a second before a smile touched her mouth. Oh, hey there, hot lips. Liv groaned. Guess we're not going to pretend that you didn't see anything. Nope. Kincaid got up from the table, letting the spinning jar slow to a halt. I have a photographic memory. She tapped her temple. There's no erasing that. Liv crossed her arms. Fantastic. And everyone else? Taryn went home, so she doesn't know what happened. Rebecca went to bed. Liv shifted in her shoes and glanced toward the door that led to the hotel lobby. Is Rebecca all right? She looked kind of freaked out. I mean, she mentioned Finn in her letter. Kincaid's smile dipped. She's okay. Confused, I think. She told me she didn't think you two knew each other. At least not like that. We don't. Kincaid gave her a look. Sure you don't. Ah. Kincaid held up a hand, bangle bracelets clinking. Hey, you don't need to explain anything to me. But honey, I know the difference between a let's get to know each other kiss and a reunion. Either way, it's not my business. My only business is following the girlfriend rules. The girlfriend rules? Yes, friends don't let friends bang drunk, she said sagely. Liv snorted, mainly because debutante Kincaid had said bang. Sounds wise. It is. It's bad for regrets and all that crap. But also, if you're going to bet a guy that hot, believe me, you'll want to be sober enough to remember it. Because damn, that boy grew up nice. Kincaid gave her a, you know what I'm saying, look. And Liv laughed. I think I'm not the only one who's a little drunk. You're telling me. Kincaid put her arm around Liv and used her for balance as she took off her heels. Which is exactly why we're going to walk up to our rooms together. I'll keep you safe from Mr. Dark and Broody, and you keep me away from that adorable bartender who keeps calling me ma'am and making it sound dirty. Liv glanced over her shoulder at the college-aged guy behind the counter, and he gave them a wink. She choked down her laugh. Come on, I think that one's out past curfew. We both need to get some sleep. They walked toward the lobby as Kincaid declared, Yes, sleep. Great idea. I'm full of great ideas tonight, Liv muttered. Oh, don't be like that. Kincaid gave Liv's shoulder a bump. Your idea wasn't terrible. I mean, even though we're both ending our night like this, drunk and alone, she said with a dramatic flourish. Gold star for being the first to take the plunge. I didn't expect it from you. The plunge. Kincaid glanced over at her as they made their way through the small lobby. We read those letters and you went immediately into action. Bam! She opened her fist like a firework exploding. No hesitation. No, I didn't. I went outside and drunkenly made out with a guy. Liv pressed the button for the elevator, and the doors slid open. It's an old bad habit of mine, not a plan of action. Kincaid gave her a sly look as she stepped inside and turned to Liv. That's not what I saw. You said you wanted to date passionate guys. I think that was a hell of a good start. That's why I invited him to breakfast. You should try it sober with him. Liv cringed. A good start? With Finn? Yeah, right. She got in the elevator and hit the button for the third floor. I appreciate the gesture, but there are no starts with Finn. What you saw, that was just wrapping up unfinished business. The period on the end of a run-on sentence. Kincaid was quiet until the elevator dinged and the doors whirred open. She stepped out, her shoes dangling from her fingertips, and a knowing smirk on her face. I don't know, sweetie. That didn't look like a period to me. That looked like a big old dot, dot, dot. A what? But Kincaid was already strolling down the hallway and wiggling her fingers in a backward goodbye. Not peaches. Liv stared after her. A dot, dot, dot. To be continued. An ellipsis. Liv said finally, but Kincaid's door was already closing. It's called an ellipsis. But it didn't matter what the hell it was called, because Kincaid was wrong. Finn wasn't going to come to breakfast. There was no start. Tomorrow, Liv would go back home to her job and apartment in Austin. He'd go wherever he lived now, and this would just be another memory filed away. Closure. Tonight had been her falling into her old, dangerous ways. Feel sad, stressed, anxious, find a lot of alcohol and a cute guy to forget with. But Finn wasn't just any cute guy, and sleeping with him would risk a lot more than an awkward goodbye in the morning. They weren't strangers. They were worse than that. They had guilt between them, and regrets. Ugly stuff. You could hook up with a stranger and walk away with a dose of shame, but not much further thought. Something like this could inflict wounds. She didn't need any more of those. She grabbed her keycard out of her pocket and headed to her room, trying to push away the knowledge that one of these doors she was passing was Finn's, that soon he'd be inside, undressing for the night, sliding beneath the covers, pent up, alone. Stop. She let herself into her room and shut the door behind her, trying to block out the rogue thoughts. Even if things with Finn weren't so complicated, she was in no place to be with anyone tonight. Alcohol and stress were stirring up all these crazy urges. Her brain was seeking oblivion, no matter the type. She'd been down that road before. No mas. She flicked on the light and winced. A tequila headache was pulsing at her temples, and at the side of the bed, what little energy she had left drained out of her. She dragged herself to the bathroom, stripping out of her clothes along the way, and put on a comfy t-shirt before brushing her teeth. One more night, and she'd be back to her normal life. The thought didn't soothe her as much as it should. Goddamn time capsule. A few days ago, she would have told anyone who asked that she was content. She lived in a great city, had a decent apartment, a job that supported her, even though she worked a lot of hours. She was good at what she did, and made more money than she ever would have from photography. She had a few friends and a couple of guys she saw casually when she had the interest or time. If she got lonely for family, her dad and older brothers weren't too far away. From the outside looking in, everything was in place, nice and neat and stable. Her former therapist would have been proud. Her mother would have called her a success. But after tonight and hearing all the declarations in the letters, her life suddenly seemed enormously mundane. Teen Liv would be disappointed in her. All those big dreams she'd whispered to Finn had been neatly filed away and dismissed. The stories ending before they began. No photos, no travel, no passionate affairs. She'd survived when so many others at Longacre hadn't gotten that luxury. And this was what she was doing with her life? Doing a job she sort of liked, living in an apartment she'd never decorated, and just marking time. The thoughts were like a growing itch, a restlessness moving through her. She couldn't get the notion out of her head that they were winning. Those pathetic cowards who'd taken so many lives were succeeding at messing with her life. Still. She sighed and stared at herself in the reflection above the sink. The circles under her eyes told her she was tired, but the fine lines at the corners told her more. Time was passing. Not in minutes, but years. 12 years since she'd walked away from the school. And what did she have to show for it? She'd moved away from things. She was pro at that. But what was she moving toward? She was still living like a college student, just with less booze and fewer one-night stands, living in a state of perpetual waiting. But waiting for what? Her mother had died at 43. What if Liv only had 13 years left? Would she look back and be happy with what she'd done in life? Proud? Satisfied? The thought made her stomach churn. She grabbed her phone from where she'd left it on the bathroom counter, ignoring the crushing number of unread work emails, and lifted it, putting it in camera mode. She stared back at her image, making sure to catch the light just right, the shadows slanting across her face, wanting to capture herself exactly as she was in the moment, and clicked. She lowered the phone, and the picture filled the screen. It was the same woman she saw in the mirror, but the camera always captured that other thing. The thing mirrors or the naked eye never seemed to catch. Cameras could tell a thousand lies, or they could tell the bald-faced truth. It was what she loved about the most, and staring back at her was the truth. She was lost. She didn't know who she was anymore. Liv Arias, that terrified, passionate girl from Longacre, or Olivia Moreno, the put-together web designer who, as far as anyone in Austin knew, had a typical past where nothing of note had happened. The latter was the role she'd played for almost 8 years now, the person both her parents would be proud of. The former was the person who'd gotten drunk and kissed Finn Dorsey. The former was the one who'd run out with a panic attack today. The former could lead her back down the road to a 10-car pileup of problems. Maybe Olivia Moreno was boring, but at least she was stable. If her mother were still around, she'd tell her to be Olivia 2.0. Before her mom had gotten sick, they'd clashed regularly over Liv's rebellious nature. Why did she have to fight everything? Why couldn't she be more like her two older brothers who were practical to the core? Why did she have to make everything so hard on herself and everyone around her? Both her parents had grown up with less than nothing, and they'd seen her attitude as a consequence of being spoiled. Not that they'd been well off, far from it, but they could pay the rent on their house and had a car and food on the table, which was more than either of her parents had growing up. So Liv, wanting to do impractical things like taking off a year before college to travel or becoming a photographer, had seemed ludicrous to them. Her mom had told her in those last quiet weeks that all she wished for Olivia was to find contentment in the simple things. A good job, a safe place to live, and the love of a good man, that's all you need. That's my wish for you. Please don't break your papa's heart. I'll break it enough when I leave. Liv sat on the edge of the bed with a sigh and rubbed her hands over her face. Instead of listening, she'd gone off the deep end after her mother passed. She had broken her dad's heart. She could still remember his face when she'd had to call him from county lockup to bail her out after she'd gotten picked up from a party and caught with pills. He'd paid the money, money he probably hadn't had to spare, and then had looked at her, with her smeared makeup, purple hair and party clothes, and told her with sad eyes, "You're not the daughter your mama raised." He left her there without a ride, and they'd stopped speaking for almost a year. If nothing else, it had been a wake-up call. She'd agreed to get back into therapy as part of her probation, and that had helped her get her shit together. The next Christmas, she'd gone home and mended fences with her dad. Now he smiled when she came to visit. Now he looked proud when she told him how well she was doing at work. She imagined what he'd say if she told him what she'd been feeling tonight, the things that were tempting her. Her dad would be terrified of her trying to recapture that girl she once was. She should be terrified. She groaned and rolled her shoulders, trying to chase the tension out of them. She needed to get out of this place. It was seeping into her skin and making her think crazy thoughts. The tequila wasn't helping either. She couldn't trust herself right now. She needed to sleep and sober up. She'd deal with the rest in the morning. She climbed into bed, turned off the light, and gave in to exhaustion, hoping for the oblivion of dreamless sleep. Finn flipped the folded rectangle of paper in his hand, the loose leaf brittle beneath his fingertips, as if it had been dipped in water and dried in the sun. He'd found it on the deck on his way back into the restaurant, and had brought it up to his room. Liv's name was in scrawly letters on the outside. He shouldn't open it. He knew that much. He could guess what it was, but he found himself unfolding the page carefully in the lamplight of his room anyway, the investigator in him too curious to resist. The words on the page were faded, but still easy enough to read. On this day, August 1st, I, Olivia Arias, promised the class of 2005. He scanned the page, hearing Liv's voice in his head as he read each word, taking them in. I will turn art into my job. I won't play it safe. I won't be practical. I'll live a passionate life and date passionate guys and see the world so I can take pictures of it. I promise, class of 2005, to live the life that scares me. He let out a long breath, his brain snagging on the word passionate. That had always been the word he'd associated with Liv back in high school. Unlike him, who'd been going through life without much thought beyond the next day, Liv had dialed into things deeply. Her photography, her views on life, the music she chose, her future plans. They all had layers of meaning for her. She'd had big thoughts and big dreams. When he told her what bands he liked, she'd wanted to know why he liked them. What did their songs make him feel? He'd never thought about it before her. Being around someone like that had been heady, had made him start thinking about things in a different way. He'd wanted to find that passionate part of himself, too. He'd wanted to be like she was, brave and bold and paving her own way instead of following the prescribed path his parents had laid out for him. And he'd never had any doubt that Liv would do exactly what she set out to do. But Liv had said tonight that they'd read the letters and that she hadn't lived up to her plans. Knowing that these things hadn't happened for her, that the night in the closet had stolen those dreams from her, made his chest ache. He couldn't help but wonder if things would have turned out differently if he'd stayed with her that night. If she'd never had to face down Joseph's gun. If they'd had each other to lean on afterward. Would they have saved each other? His cell phone buzzed on the bedside table, breaking him from his morose thoughts. He set the letter aside to grab the call.
Hello? It's Billings. You in a place you can talk?
Finn tipped his head back against the headboard, not up for a call with his boss, but knowing he didn't have a choice. When Billings wanted to talk to you, you talked to him.
I'm good.
Even though he'd known it was overkill, he'd swept the room for bugs when he'd arrived out of habit and had booked the room under a different name.
Where are you? Wallace said after your psych eval you didn't show up to get the key for the apartment we set up for you in Richmond.
Finn sighed.
I made my own arrangements for my break. I don't want to be in Virginia. Plus, I need to take care of some personal things. I have a place to lie low. You mean you don't want to be where all the resources to help you transition back are?
Finn didn't respond. His boss already knew the answer. They'd set up a
support network
for Finn after he'd taken what they considered too big a risk on the last job. He'd taken out the second-in-command in Dragonfly, which had been a victory, but he'd done it without approval, and in a way that had nearly gotten him killed. Now they were worried the assignment had messed too badly with his head. Finn wanted to tell the powers that be that it had little to do with that, and much more to do with the fact that he believed certain things were worth risking, to rid the Earth of scum like that. Dragonfly hadn't been the organization that sold Joseph Miller the guns for the Longacre shooting, something Finn had believed when he'd sought out the assignment. But it could have been. They would have, and had, put weapons in kids' hands without blinking an eye. Finn had made sure that wouldn't happen again. But now he was paying the price, and the thought of weekly appointments with the shrink and everyone he worked with eyeballing him to make sure he wasn't screwed up after being undercover so long made him want to punch things. Billings grunted.
This line's secure. Where are you?
Finn squeezed his temples.
Near my hometown. I've rented a lake house from an old friend. No one from Dragonfly ever made the connection to my identity, and they all think I'm dead anyway, so I'm good here. All I plan to do is rest, fish, and work on some projects. That's what I need to recuperate, not a bunch of therapy appointments. I need to be in my own space for a while.
Billings was quiet for a long moment.
I get that, and I'm not going to stop you. You've earned your break, but you've been under for 2 years. The transition from that can be a hell of a jolt. I want you checking in with Doc Robson at least weekly by phone. That's not a request.
Finn closed his eyes.
Got it. But I'm all right. I know the difference between me and Axel. I'm not going to do anything crazy. I just need some breathing room. I'll be ready for my next assignment by the end of summer.
Billings sniffed.
We'll see. I know you're champing at the bit to go back.